morning. Good morning to you that are here and to those that are home. Shalom Aleichem. May the peace of God be all around you. When Adrian gave you a little background on the Songs of Ascent, I just want to say that they're known in the Bible in Hebrew, Shir HaMahalot. Shir Mahalot, the Songs of Ascent. The word alot is a word that means to rise up or to go up or to ascend. It's used in a lot of ways, but one of the forms of it is aliyah. And that form is used primarily to speak of going up to Jerusalem. Today, if you were an exile living outside of Israel, and you were a Jew and you wish to return home, the return home is called Aliyah. You would be making Aliyah, returning home. With that in mind, we'll proceed now, because what I want to deliver as a message relates to Jerusalem, the covenant city. And I would just say again, Lord, bless us with the wisdom of your word. Bless us with the comfort that you're sovereign over all of history. And with that, Lord, we recognize you as being the God of all creation. Sha'alu shalom Yerushalayim. Sha'alu shalom Yerushalayim. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee, peace within thy walls, and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sake, I will say now, peace be within thee. For the sake of the house of Jehovah our God, I will seek thy good. Jerusalem is a unique city. It's described as a holy city to three faiths. For the Jew, it represents the very foundation of their faith, the very heart of their nation and religious identity. It has been their hope for 2,500 years that they have been in the diaspora, in exile. So for 2,500 years, they have been hoping to return to Jerusalem. This exile is referred to in the Bible as the times of the Gentiles. It's referred to both in the Old Testament in the book of Daniel and in the New Testament in the book of Luke. It begins with the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem and Solomon's temple, and carrying away of the captives. In fact, Daniel and his three friends were carried away, Ezekiel was carried away, and others. And this time of the Gentiles continues until this very day. For the Christian, Jerusalem is described as the cradle of Christianity. And although for some Christian denominations, other places, such as Rome, is of equal or greater importance, but for us, for the evangelical, Bible-believing Christian, those of us who believe that the Bible is infallible and is the infallible Word of God, it's both historic and prophetic. Jerusalem represents the place that salvation was obtained and given to us believers. This is where the death, burial, and resurrection of our Lord and Savior took place. And Jerusalem is the place where he will return and reign as king over all the earth. Jerusalem is mentioned 660 times in the Hebrew Bible, Tanakh, but that's better known to us as the Old Testament. Jerusalem is mentioned 160 times in the New Testament, and that's at least 160 times. Altogether, more than 820 times. Jerusalem is also considered important to the Muslim faith, but it's the third most holy place behind Mecca and Medina. Jerusalem is not mentioned at all in the Quran. But the most important reason to see Jerusalem as unique is because the true God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac and Jacob, has declared it to be his own. As I go through these things, I'm going to be reading, quoting many Bible scriptures, and I'm going to save the chapter and verse till the end. I don't want you to try to jump around and find these verses because it will detract from what we really need to do, and that is listen to the message. Again, the most important reason to see Jerusalem as unique is because God has chosen it. For Jehovah has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his habitation. This is my resting place forever. Here will I dwell, for I have desired it. There I will make the horn of David to bud. I have ordained a lamp for mine anointed. Yes, I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. I will tell of the decree. Jehovah said unto me, Thou art my son. This day have I begotten thee. Ask of me, and I will give thee the nations for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Psalm 132, 13 and 14, 17. Psalm 2, 6 through 8. These verses are a biblical testimony that a far greater destiny awaits Jerusalem when Messiah establishes the kingdom in Zion upon the throne of David. The names of Jerusalem. I prepared a couple of slides with Austin's help this morning. And so we have some names of Jerusalem. There are many names of the city of Jerusalem, both biblical and secular. The Jewish sages say there were 70 names for Jerusalem. Not 69, not 71, 70. We won't go through all of them. Other faiths have given names to the city also, mostly it seems with the intent of somehow avoiding the biblical name. So here are just a few of those names. Jerusalem, Yerushalayim in Hebrew. This is the most common name in the Bible, and it means city of peace. Let's see. So there we go, Jerusalem. The holy city. The holy city is used in the Bible and by other faiths to indicate Jerusalem's importance to them. Al-Qud and Al-Masjid Aqsa. These are names used by the Muslim faith and Islam to identify Jerusalem. The home of the Al-Aqsa Mosque is in Jerusalem, and the Muslim shrine, the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock sits on the site where King Solomon's temple stood. Al-Qud or Al-Masjid Aqsa means the farthest place. And the significance of this place to the Muslim faith is that by their tradition, Muhammad was transported in a dream on a flying horse to the height of Temple Mount, Mount Moriah, where he ascended to heaven, and there he received revelation from Gabriel. Basically, he corrected the Hebrew Bible to reflect what Muhammad prophesied. Jebus, which we see first in Judges 19:10, is the name of Mount Moriah. King David, by conquest, captured Moriah from the Jebusite inhabitants. David subsequently purchased this site, the threshing floor, from Araunah, the Jebusite. This is documented in 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles 21. It's also called Aelia Capitolina. This is the name of the Roman colony built on the ruins of Jerusalem after it had been totally razed by the Roman siege of 66 through 70 AD. The Roman garrison stationed there was primarily to keep the Jewish people from returning to Jerusalem. And because of these restrictions of Jewish efforts to return to Jerusalem and being kept from returning to their place of worship, we see the first and second, and maybe the third, depending on how you count them, Jewish revolts. One is the Bar Kokhba revolt. Many were killed. In fact, these previous Jewish revolts against Rome led to war, bloodshed, much persecution by the armies of Rome. And when the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, Josephus records that more than a million Jewish people were killed. Other names for Jerusalem include the City of Lights, the City of Truth, the City of David, Salem. But by far, the most often used name biblically other than Jerusalem is Zion. The scripture refers to Zion in three different ways. Firstly, the city of Jerusalem is identified as Zion. Jehovah loveth the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are spoken of thee, O city of God. Psalm 87, 2 and 3. Great is Jehovah, and greatly be he praised in the city of our God, in his holy mountain. Beautiful in elevation, the joy of the whole world is Mount Zion, on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. Psalm 48, 1 and 2. Secondly, the land of Israel is referred to Zion. The land of Israel is referred to Zion. For Jehovah hath comforted Zion. He hath comforted all her waste places, and hath made her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of Jehovah. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, and thanksgiving, and the voice of melody. Isaiah 51, verse 3. And thirdly, God himself uses Zion to identify the Jewish people. For I am Jehovah thy God, who stirreth up the sea so that the waves thereof roar. Jehovah of hosts is his name. And I have put my words in thy mouth, and have covered thee in the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens and lay the foundations of the earth, and say unto Zion, thou art my people. Isaiah 51, 15 and 16. Jerusalem, the land of Israel, and the Jewish people are biblically bound together in a covenantal relationship. The Lord has promised that there will always be a nation of Israel. Again, the Lord has promised that there will always be a nation of Israel. Thus saith Jehovah, if my covenant of day and night stand, if I have not appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth, then will I also cast away the seed of Jacob and of David my servant, so that I will not take of his seed to be rulers over the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. For I have caused their captivity return, and will have mercy on them. Jeremiah 33, 25 and 26. Actually, Jeremiah was a little bit clearer. This was kind of put in a negative way, but in another verse, set of verses in Jeremiah, he says, thus saith Jehovah, who given the sun for the light of day, and the ordinance of the moon and of the stars for light by night, who stirreth up the sea so that the waves thereof roar. Jehovah of hosts is his name. If these ordinances depart from before me, saith Jehovah, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus saith Jehovah, if heaven can be measured and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, then will I cast off the seeds of Israel. For what they have done, saith Jehovah. Jeremiah 31, 35, 37. These verses, without a doubt, say that there will always be a nation of Israel, because God will never do the things that he has said in these verses. Well, where is Jerusalem? If I give you a map, and there's one right there, most of you can pick out where Jerusalem is quickly enough. It's going to be right here. Okay. If you are looking at that, one of the things that you will see, and Adrian says it's built on a high hill. Jerusalem is on a high place. Now, is it the highest place in Israel? No, it's not. It's immediately to the east of Jerusalem is the Mount of Olives. And if you're on the Mount of Olives, you will look down on the Mount of Moriah and see Jerusalem. If you go to the west of Jerusalem, you're going to be standing on the Mount of Zion, and it's taller, and you'll be looking down on it. If you go north, you'll find Mount Carmel, looking down upon the Valley of Armageddon, Megiddo. There's a mountain at the opening of the valley called Armageddon, which in Greek is Armageddon, a name we all know. If you go even further north, there is Mount Bental that looks into Syria and looks into Lebanon and looks down on the road to Damascus. That's the road that Paul took when he traveled on his missionary journeys. It also looks down on what's called the field of blood. It's an area where a great tank battle took place in 1973, the Yom Kippur War, and many, many Syrians and Lebanese attacked Israel with many, many tanks, hundreds, and Israel was able to defend itself with just a few tanks and one in the hand of the Lord. If you look even further, you're going to find other hard places. You're going to find Mount Tabor, Mount Hermon, both of which kind of share the idea of where Jesus was the transfiction of Jesus. So there are many high places, but Mount Moriah is a special one. About 4,000 years ago, Abraham first visited the site of what is now Jerusalem. And he said, "Take now thy son, thy only son, whom thou lovest, even Isaac, and get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. That's Genesis 22. Some even believe that this may have been the place where Abraham met Melchizedek, the king and priest, after rescuing Lot from the marauding kings. And there he made a sacrifice and an offering to God. On this same site, about a thousand years ago, King David, who reigned as king for 7 years in Hebron and 3 years in Jerusalem, captured the Jebusite stronghold and made it the capital of his kingdom. It was here, too, that David was commanded to build an altar and make a sacrifice for a sin of disobedience against God. And so David purchased, for a fair price, the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. Although King David desired to build a house for the Lord in Jerusalem, he was told that he could not because of the blood on his hands. The building of the house for God was reserved for his second son, for his son Solomon. I'd like to just make a note for us here, parenthetical note, if you will. Jerusalem is one of three places that the Bible records a deed title to. Specific land. Here at Mount Moriah and the threshing floor of Araunah, David purchased it for a fair price. The cave of Machpelah in Hebron, which was purchased by Abraham and is known as the Tomb of the Patriarchs, it too was purchased for a great price. Shechem was purchased by Jacob from the children of Hamor, where he set an altar and called it El Elohei Israel, God is the God of Israel. All three of these places are not occupied or claimed by Palestinian Arabs. Shechem is now known as Nablus. Hebron is governed by Arab Palestinians. Arab Palestinians claim Jerusalem as their capital, and the Temple Mount is controlled by the Waqf, W-A-Q-F, under Jordanian custodianship. It's on this same location, Mount Moriah, that King Solomon built the first temple, and the Shekinah glory of the Lord entered therein. Now when Solomon had made an end of praying, the fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offerings and the sacrifice. And the glory of Jehovah filled the house, and the priests could not enter into the house of Jehovah because the glory of Jehovah filled Jehovah's house. 2 Chronicles 7, 1 and 2. After King Solomon died, the kingdom divided into two kingdoms, the 10 northern tribes, Israel, and the tribe of Judah in the south. Judah included the remnant of Benjamin and the tribe of Levi. The Levites were bound to the temple or to Levitical cities, but they had no land. Jeroboam, the king of the northern tribe, to consolidate his rule, set up an alternative worship system and two new places for worship to keep the northern tribes away from Jerusalem. And Jeroboam thought, if this people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of Jehovah in Jerusalem, then will the heart of the people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah. And they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Whereupon the king took counsel and made two calves of gold, and he said to them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And he set the one in Bethel, and the other put he in Dan. 1 Kings 12. And so there was a judgment. Both the north kingdom and Judah over time fell into sin, idolatry, and immorality. The judgment of the Lord fell on both kingdoms, first upon the northern kingdom of Israel, the Assyrians taking them into captivity and dispersing them throughout the land, and then on Judah. As prophesied by Jeremiah, it says, the cities of the south are shut up, and there is none to open them. Judah is carried away captive, all of it. It is wholly carried away captive. Jeremiah 13. The prophet Ezekiel recorded a vision in which he saw the Shekinah glory of the Lord depart the temple. And the glory of Jehovah mounted up from the cherub being over, being the place in which God rested, and stood over the threshold of the house, and the house was filled with the cloud, and the court was full of the brightness of Jehovah's glory. And the glory of Jehovah went up from the midst of the city and stood upon the mountain, which is on the east side of the city. Ezekiel 10 and 11. However, Ezekiel also saw a vision of a new temple recorded in chapters 40 and 41. Even a more magnificent and even larger than the house that is built by Solomon, this new one will probably not even fit upon the Temple Mount. Zechariah tells us this temple will be built by the Messiah himself. And speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh Jehovah of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of this place, and he shall build the temple of Jehovah. Even he shall build the temple of Jehovah, and he shall bear the glory, and he shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. Zechariah 6. In 586 BCE, I don't know how many of you are used to that. We say before the Common Era, and if we are talking about AD, it's the Common Era, but it might be appropriate to think of it as before the Christian Era and then the Christian Era. But on the ninth day of Av, Solomon's temple and the city of Jerusalem was destroyed by the Babylonians. The choice people of Zion were taken into captivity. We see that with Daniel and his friends and with Ezekiel and with many others that were taken into captivity. But there was a covenant promise with this. For thus saith Jehovah, after 70 years are accomplished for Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. Jeremiah 29. And in keeping with God's promise in prophecy, 100 years earlier, Isaiah wrote of Cyrus, the Persian king, and then confirmed in Ezra and in 2 Chronicles, and on the Cyrus cylinder itself, a secular record of history. Cyrus commanded the exiles return to Jerusalem. Under Zerubbabel, over 42,000 Jewish exiles returned to Jerusalem. And followed by other returning exiles with Ezra and Nehemiah, the temple and the walls of Jerusalem were rebuilt. But yet another prophecy of judgment and redemption for Jerusalem was made by Daniel. And while he was still in Babylonian captivity, he made this prophecy. Over 100 prophecies were given in Daniel, many of which concern Jerusalem and the coming of the Messiah, most of which have been fulfilled completely. Many others, however, were to be sealed up into the time of the end. Daniel predicted the fall of the Babylonians, the Persians and the Medes, the Hellenistic Greeks and the Roman Empire. Near the end of the exile in Babylon, Daniel was given a far-reaching and unique vision by the angel Gabriel that summarized the future of Jerusalem. The prophecy gave a definable time span that would pinpoint the time of the coming of the Messiah to Jerusalem, the destruction of the second temple, and the desolation of Zion until the end. So listen carefully to this, and hope I won't mess it up too bad. 70 weeks, literally 77s, are decreed upon the people and upon thy holy city to finish transgression and to make an end of sin and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring an everlasting righteousness and to seal up vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Now, therefore, and discern that from the going forth of the command to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the anointed one, which is the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks. And 62 weeks it shall be built again, and the streets and the moats and even the troublesome times. And after the 62 weeks shall the anointed one be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come after shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and therefore shall be with flood, and even unto the end shall be war. Desolations are determined. Daniel 9:24. Within the time frame of this prophecy are several events, all related to Jerusalem. They are predicted, and as well, the same time in the time span in which these events are to occur. So both what is going to happen and when it's going to happen is predicted. First, the rebuilding of Jerusalem, the city, the temple, and the walls. This was fulfilled when the third group of exiles returned to Jerusalem with Ezra and Nehemiah, and they completed the rebuilding of the temple of the walls. Secondly, the death of Messiah is predicted. This is fulfilled by the crucifixion of Jesus on Nisan the 14th, which is Passover, 483 years after the decree to destroy and rebuild the city and the walls. If you do the math, that would be between 29 and 33 in the Christian era. And the reason that span is so great is because this 3 or 4 year period is because there's some dispute as to when to start the count for those 483 years. But either way, it fits perfectly for the time that the Messiah is sacrificed on our behalf. Thirdly, a second destruction of the city and the sanctuary, the temple, is predicted. This is fulfilled by the destruction of Herod's temple in Jerusalem on the 9th day of Av in the year AD 70. This was by the Romans. And after these things, there would be a long period of time characterized by war and desolation, which is the state of Jerusalem and Israel to this very day. These are the events that Daniel prophesied. With all of these prophecies fulfilled, accounting for the 69 of the 70 of the sevens, and by understanding the 77s of Daniel, it is possible to put the date on these events. The last of the sevens are yet to be fulfilled, but will be fulfilled in the tribulation. I'm not going to try to unpack the teaching that you would need to understand Daniel. I would just suggest that you find an opportunity to study the book of Daniel and see how great his prophecies were. So ask yourself this question: who was the Messiah? Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, the King cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass, upon a colt, the foal of an ass. Zechariah 9. The event of the Messiah's life, and particularly his death, are thoroughly documented in the four Gospels of the New Testament. His crucifixion was outside the temple gates in Jerusalem at a place called Golgotha. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my roaring? But I am a worm and no man, a reproach of men and despised of the people. All they that see me laugh me to scorn, and they shoot out their lips and they shake their head. For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. Psalm 22. Jesus fulfilled over 300 prophecies of the Old Testament. But even in his role as a prophet, he himself, while alive, went on to prophesy about Jerusalem. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that kills the prophets and stones them which are sent unto thee, how often I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathers the chicks under her wing, and ye would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. For I say unto you, you shall not see me henceforth till ye shall say, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord. Baruch haba b'shem Adonai. And he has come near. I'm sorry, that was from the book of Matthew 23:37-39. And when he had come near, he beheld the city and wept over it, saying, if thou hadst known even now, at least in this thy day, the things which belong unto thy peace. But now they are hid from thine eyes, for the day shall come upon thee that thy enemies shall cast a trench about thee and compass thee all around, and keep thee on every side, and ye shall be laid even with the ground, and thy children within thee, they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knew not the time of thy visitation. Luke 19. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive unto all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Luke 21:24. Jesus himself confirmed the prophecies of Daniel on Jerusalem. And it may seem coincidental that the ninth day of Av on the Hebrew calendar, the very date of the destruction of the Solomon Temple, that the destruction of the second temple in Jerusalem, prophesied by Jesus 40 years earlier, occurred on the same day in AD 70. But is that really a coincidence? 2,000 years of desolation and war. During the long history of Jerusalem, the city and the temple had been destroyed twice, besieged 23 times, attacked 52 times, recaptured 44 times, and that's just subject to human count. We don't know, probably more. With the destruction of the second temple, the darkest hours had begun. Jerusalem and the land were conquered by the Byzantines, the Muslims, the Crusaders, and the Turks. The Holy Land was made desolate and the people were trampled upon, but the survival of Jerusalem and Zion was certain on God's covenant promise. Sing and rejoice, O daughters of Zion, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Lord. And many nations shall be joined to the land in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, and they shall know the Lord of hosts has sent me unto them. And the Lord shall inherit Judah, his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. Be silent, O all flesh, before the Lord, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. Zechariah 2. In the 7th century, the shrine known as the Dome of the Rock was built by the Muslim Caliph Ibn Malik in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. And although it has fallen into disrepair, been rebuilt, and expanded over the centuries, it now, even today, is one of the most recognized structures in Jerusalem. To say that this structure is a source of much of the tension in the Middle East and even the world is too light of an evaluation. And later, Suleiman the Magnificent in 1541 rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem and the gates, including the Golden Gate, for his planned entry. But abruptly, and for reasons perhaps not unknown, he sealed that gate, and it remains to this day. All other gates remain open. It has been suggested that the reason that it was closed is because of the prophecy that the Messiah would enter through that gate. This may or may not be true, but today there are many graves of the Muslim faith buried in the front of this gate to prevent the entry of the Christian Messiah. And so over the remaining centuries, Israel and Jerusalem remained a backwater and of little consequence to the rest of the world. Desolate, but still the crossroads of the warring nations. Mark Twain, who visited Palestine in the late 1800s, wrote in his book, Innocents Abroad, this about Israel and Jerusalem. A desolate country where soil is rich enough, but is given over wholly to weeds, a silent, mournful expanse. A desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with the prompt of life and action. We never saw a human being on the whole route. There are hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, who are fast friends of the worthless soil, had almost deserted the country. The writings of a Scotch pastor, Robert Murray McShane, who also visited Palestine and Jerusalem in the 1800s, and the paintings of David Roberts confirm the desolate picture of Israel and Jerusalem. Although Jerusalem and the land of Israel was desolate and suffered the ravages of war over the centuries, there was always a remnant of the Jewish people in the land. True, there were Arabs, Druze, Bedouins, and others of the Muslim religion in the land of Israel, but there is no record of any nationality claiming Jerusalem as their capital, except for the Jewish people. They did so even in the many places of their exile. Jerusalem in the land of Israel awaited the prophecies of the return of the exiles. We look at Jerusalem in the land of Israel yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and we think, God said, though thou no more be termed forsaken, let me start again, please. Thou shalt not no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy hand any more be termed desolate. But thou shalt be called Hephzibah, my delight is in her, and the land Beulah, for the Lord delighteth in thee, and the land shall be married. Isaiah 62. In the late 1800s and 1900s, the Jewish people began a great return to the land of Egypt. Israel. They were encouraged by the intent of the public pledge of the British in the Balfour Mandate of Balfour Declaration of 1917, a declaration which proclaimed a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Many exiles began a return. At the same time, the World War I Allied armies under British General Allenby moved across Palestine, and just 40 days after the Balfour Declaration was signed, General Allenby captured Jerusalem on the Feast of Hanukkah. As the Allied biplanes flew over and dropped leaflets, the Muslim inhabitants took them as messages from Allah and surrendered the city without a shot fired. It is only when we see such events that we are uplifted by God and his prophecies. As birds flying, so will the Lord of hosts defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve it. Isaiah 31. As the Jewish people continued their return to Zion, the single most influential and horribly devastating thing to bring the exiles back to Zion was the rise of the Nazi Party, Adolf Hitler, and the Jewish Holocaust of World War II. At least 6 million Jews and many others, Christians and Gypsies alike, were murdered by the Nazis. After the end of World War II, thousands of refugees returned under great hardship to their promised home. May 1948, the nation of Israel, with only 23% of the original land of the Balfour Declaration, and much less than the original boundaries of the land given by God, was reborn by a proclamation of the UN. On that same day, all five of the neighboring Arab nations came against the new Jewish state. But miraculously, the Lord of hosts delivered the new Jewish state. In 1967, the Six-Day War, all of the Arab nations of Israel again attacked Israel, and again the Lord of hosts delivered Israel. And this time, they recaptured the holy city, Jerusalem. This is the first time in almost 2,500 years that Jerusalem was in the control of the Jewish people. And many recognize this as the hand of God. When Jehovah brought back those that returned to Zion, we were like unto them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the nations, Jehovah has done a great thing for them. Psalm 126. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without king and without prince and without sacrifice and without pillar, and without ephod or teraphim. Afterwards shall the children of Israel turn and seek God and seek Jehovah their God and David their king, and shall come with fear unto Jehovah and unto his goodness in the latter days. Hosea 3. Messianic prophecies of old continue to be fulfilled. Just as Jesus fulfilled all prophecies concerning his first coming, the Messiah will return again and fulfill all prophecies. And said unto him, Run, speak unto the young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as villages without walls, by reasons of the multitude of men and cattle therein. For I, saith Jehovah, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and I will be the glory in the midst of her. Zechariah 2. Thus said Jehovah of hosts, Behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. Zechariah 8. In the latter part of the 20th century and up until now, more than 6 million Jewish people have returned to Zion, with as many as 13 returning in one day, from the north and from the south and the east and the west and from all countries of the earth, they're returning. If an exile returns to Jerusalem today or returns to Israel, whether they arrive by boat or by plane, one of the first things they do is they go up to Jerusalem. If you and I were to visit Israel, one of the first things we would do would be to go up to Jerusalem. And so the Jerusalem covenant. Although thousands of years of history count the fulfillment of prophecy, the contention over Jerusalem still remains. In 1980, the Knesset, Israel's parliament, voted and approved overwhelmingly a bill proclaiming Jerusalem as the eternal and indivisible capital of Israel. The Arab world's reaction was violent. The PLO intifada followed. Terrorist activity abounded, and many died. In 1992, another document, the Jerusalem Covenant, was drawn up affirming Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel. And this is a bond between the Jewish people and the promises of God. This document is almost entirely made up of direct quotes from the Bible scriptures regarding God's promise to Zion, the city, the land, and the people. This document was signed by all the leaders of the Jewish people, whether in Israel or elsewhere in the world. Unlike so many of the previous declarations, the signing of this document, as momentous it may be, has completely escaped the attention of the world. Of course, the hand of God is involved. This document and the sentiment expressed is both spiritual and prophetic in significance. Though many prophecies concerning Jerusalem and Zion, the whole of the city, the people, and the land have been fulfilled, still many remain to be fulfilled. Are regarding the reign of the Messiah and the millennial kingdom. We should be reminded of the admonition to pray for the peace of Jerusalem and look forward to the day that the Jewish people will say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, for this is when Jesus will return to the earth, to Jerusalem, and to the temple, which he will build to the glory of God, the Lord God of Israel. This is the time that we, as believing Christian followers, we'll see all knees bow and every tongue confess Jesus is Lord. Isaiah wrote beautifully, under the guidance of God, these verses. For Zion's sake, I will not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest, until the righteousness go forth as brightness, and her salvation is a lamp that burns, and the nation shall see righteousness, and all the kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of Jehovah shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown of beauty in the hands of Jehovah, and a royal diadem in the hands of God. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken. Thou neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land Beulah, for Jehovah delights in thee, and thy land shall be married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over thee. I have set watchmen upon thy walls, O Jerusalem. They shall never hold thy peace, day or night. Ye that are Jehovah's watchers, take ye no rest, and give him no rest, till he establishes and till he makes Jerusalem a praise on the earth. Isaiah 62. Faith is the mark of a true believer. The book of Hebrews chapter 11 identifies many of the faithful in God's eyes. These are the elders that the Jews look back to, the elders that we see as the foundation of our faith, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and others. Of Abraham and his heirs, it is said, by faith he became a sojourner in the land of promise, in a land not his own, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for the city which has the foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Hebrews 11. But as it is, they aspire to a better land, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Hebrews 11. The final chapters of the book of Revelation tell of the final glory of Jerusalem and Zion. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. The sea is no more, and I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them, and they shall be his people. And God himself shall be with them and be their God, and he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more. The first things are passed away, and he that sits on the throne said, 'Behold, I make all things new.' And he said, 'Write, for these words are faithful and true.'" Revelation 21, 1 through 5. So, I don't think we can discount the fact that God has set Zion, Jerusalem, the people of Israel, in a special place. Not to say that they're perfect. Today, they're secular for the most part. And the covering that is over their eyes actually provides the time for us in the church, in the believing world, to go out and reap a great harvest, to take the gospel message that is spoken of so many times in relation to Jerusalem to all the world. And so that's our commission. Before we end our time here right now, rather than me praying over you, I would like you to just take this moment and consider what has been said. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Because when you pray for the peace of Jerusalem, you are saying that when the Lord returns the second time, that's when all things will be set right. So please, just in your quiet place, if you will, just take a moment ahead and please pray.